My black. My black is the deep blue black of the spot on my father's forehead that I miss kissing. My black is the spirit of the red, green, and gold. My black is the black steel spine of Nanny of the Maroons, the Three Mamas of St. Croix, Marcus Garvey, Toussaint Louverture, Dottie Bookman, Franz Fanon. My black is the crowded paradise that birthed me. My black is the white sand that hugs the rock I call home. My black is the drum in my veins to reach the unreachable spaces so I can become home. My black is shuffling the pack of my ancestral memories to cipher out what's really going on. My black is not a burden. My black is not a condition to be understood. My black cannot be misunderstood. My black is not in, because fuck what you heard, my black was never out. My black is not a ganja haze. My black is the magic of my gravity-defying kinky hair. My black is the divine animal with the privilege to conquer the world and the spirit to share it. My black is not a movement, because my black is a verb that encases my innards. My black is God's whisper, and she's whispering only the profane and the profound. My black is Mother Maya. My black is en route to wisdom. And today I'm further along, because my black has no joy ceiling.
Yes! Welcome to Nuance. We're back, and thank you, Barbara. That was such a powerful poem.
You know how I feel about the whole thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Mm-hmm. Hello, everyone. Yeah.
We're back.
So,
this poem I heard for the first time last weekend.
Saturday?
Yeah. On Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the open mic.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is the open mic for people of the African diaspora. It's an event that we've been holding in Stuttgart now for 1 year.
Yeah.
It was the 1 year anniversary on Saturday.
Yeah. It's the baby.
It's
1 year.
It's 1 year old now,
yeah.
So it's getting bigger.
And it's us trying to create a community for ourselves, for artists, mm-hmm. Poets, writers, musicians, yeah.
Anybody that has something to say. It's mm-hmm. like on this night, your voice gets the spotlight. Your voice gets the focus. And what I loved about your poem is that you started the night off with this poem. Remember?
And you remember I was saying to you, I don't know, does it sound aggressive? But I feel like it wasn't really aggressive.
I think it was confrontational, absolutely.
Yes, Danielle, and we know you're into that. By the way,
she's
into the whole, you know, black.
Oh my God.
Hear me roar.
Oh my God. So me and Barbara, I think this again goes into like our generational divide.
She's basically saying I'm old. But I'm okay with it. I'm fine.
It's okay. I do feel like that could be what it is, that sometimes you see me as being like
a pit bull when it comes on to this whole thing, which is not a bad thing, but I'm just like...
It's not a bad thing. I'm very much like, I'm not going to sit here. I told you. You know what, guys? I was telling Barbara on the way here that I sat there and I ate my Nutella sandwich.
Yes, yeah.
Looked me up and down and said, ooh, we can tell you like Nutella. And I looked at her and I said, oh, are you saying that because I have brown skin?
Fight.
You know, and she was like, you know, like, yes, I'm going, don't think you're going to say something to me. You know what I mean? Don't think I'm going to give you the pass because I'm not, you know, I'm not. And I think that one of our ways as black people to survive in a white supremacy is to give those passes, you know, to laugh those things off. And so what I loved about your poem is that, no, you are confronting all of that. You're saying my black isn't in because it was never out. And what we find is that in our white society, you have things like this. I don't know if you saw with this whole Miley Cyrus situation.
Yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but like,
I saw
in
that.
Order for her to build her career, it was like suddenly that black was in and now that black is out.
But don't you feel like people like, who was it, P. Diddy, and all of those artists that supported her career and gave her basically a pass. They gave her a pass in, mm-hmm. right? That they also have to take some of the responsibility. Just like T.I. needs to take responsibility for Iggy Azalea.
To be honest, Iggy disgusts me so much that I have actually set up not to learn about her story. So I can't say much. But what I can say is that at the same time, as Black people in this system, the fact that we have to do those things, like, what level are we at if that's the type of stuff we have to do? You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And so these are all things that, like, yeah, I'm absolutely unapologetically confrontational. And if you're gonna come at, like, I know where I'm living. I'm living, you know what I'm saying? And I think that Germany only strengthened to that. I think for you, like, to have your family and to have your space and, you know, to... I don't know. What do you think it is?
I feel like
you definitely come at this from a different way.
Yes, because for me, I felt very strongly after reading the book and
the sellout
mm-hmm. that I needed to be clear that, you know, what your Black is not necessarily what my Black is.
Exactly.
You know,
and that's okay.
And there's a point in the poem that it's like, it says, my Black is the drum in my veins to reach the unreachable spaces so I can become home. Mm. And for me, that's it. I am looking to find all the spaces that are unfamiliar to me. And to me, being a woman from Jamaica, a woman who is Black, a woman who is a mother, a woman who is a wife, a lover, a friend, a sister, I think that my Black is something that is unique to me.
And that's the point of the open mic, is that it's something unique to all of us, right. And to have that space to express that, right. Because your Black is very different than my Black, but at the same time, I could hear what you were saying, and it resonated with me to the point where I was like, I was snapping, I was the only one snapping sometimes, but, like, you know, like, that's how I feel. We have very different Blacks.
And, you know, one of the things that, let's just let me quickly say this.
Mm-hmm.
I remember meeting a friend here, she's from Africa, and she said, well, Africa, she's from Nigeria, and she said to me, well, you know, you all are the weak ones because you're the ones that got caught. And when she said that to me, well, I think it was 6 years ago, it put me into a state of, you know, of deep research, mm-hmm. because I never imagined that Africans saw us that way. And she was like, yes, that's what, as Nigerians, that's how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, okay, you can't speak for all of Nigeria. You speak for yourself. And she was like, no, at school, that's how... Yeah. Like, are you serious? But
wow.
I don't know if I can take her word for it, though. But it put me on a trajectory to discover a little bit more about my history and about not just African history, but Caribbean people, how we resisted and what really went down. When you talk about identifying and defining Blackness, I think for most Jamaicans, we see ourselves as Africans, but it was shocking to me that Africans see us as, you know, the ones who are weak.
And I remember when you told me that I actually asked one of my friends who is also from the continent, and they confirmed. So I don't know if they learned it in school. I didn't ask
where
that.
Where was he from? Or
Cameroon, so West Cameroon, African.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, once you come to, once you're confronted with that fact, because as a Jamaican, if you had asked me this before meeting her, I would be like, no, I consider myself to be an African who just happened to be living in Jamaica because of history. But she's like, no, boo-boo, you are Jamaican.
I feel like this is also getting into some really painful parts of being Black, because when you have something as terrible as the transatlantic slave trade, and people who are on the continent that are fully aware of what's going on, how do you create the cognitive dissonance to allow that to happen mm-hmm. to your own people?
Exactly. And that's what that poem, first and final word, that was what that was about. Maybe I'll read that in another podcast, but
that would be good.
That was what that was about, how we can blame the Europeans, we can blame the white man, we can do all of that, but at some point we're gonna have to come home to the fact that there were some they got assistance.
Yeah.
Yes,
assistance.
And it's it helped me to realize, okay, you can identify as Black, but you also first and foremost have to identify as you, what your unique experience is.
Yeah, I hear that. At the same time, I also don't think that it's something where you have to identify as you first and then your Blackness. I see it as intertwined. I see that is not like there's me, personal me first, and then there's me, structural me, or there's me, historical me. It's like that all creates
No,
me.
But what I'm saying, Doina, there's a danger when you attempt to think that there is a, you know, there's a family of we're all Black and we're all in this together. And what I found, what my experience has taught me here in Germany, is that is so not true.
Yeah.
We might have the same skin, but we're not the same kin.
Not all skin folk are kin folk.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. I feel like That's what I mean by that. You have to do the work to identify yourself.
But don't you also think to create unity? Because ultimately, I think that when we're talking about a history of colonization that has led to white supremacist systems globally, whether you're looking at the people that are crossing into Europe, you know, through Libya, or you're talking about the black people who are killed in the United States every 28 hours, like, we're still seeing reflections of that system. And so the fact that there are people in Africa who look at it like, yeah, but those people that got sent over were the weak ones because, you know, they were complicit in the creation of this system that we're in. Like, these are multiple issues that I think we can look at, and we can look at the anti-blackness within our own community, and it doesn't cancel out the anti-blackness that we are experiencing in the societies we live in the West.
Yeah. It's very exhausting.
It's exhausting.
It really is. And at the same time, I think to have
the energy for it, then it's very easy to come off as militant or a pit bull or something like that. But it's not.
You're throwing words back at me, Danielle. But let's talk about the first episode and go through what your initial response, the response that you got were.
So first of all, we're eating grapes, guys. So this time there's no tea. This time because we have ice water.
And grapes. And let's just say that Germany is winning today. This is probably the best weather we've had.
This is the best day since last year.
No, that's true. That's not even funny.
That's why it's funny, because it's so sad.
Sad. And you know, I have to say, I hate the fact that living in Germany has forced me to be that kind of person who's like, oh my God, there's sun, let's go outside. I hate that I've become that person, because I'm from a country where, I mean, it's just like, given it's going to be a beautiful day, now you have to run like rats. When you see the sun out, you're like, oh my God, let's go outside. Let's get some vitamin D. It's just a mess.
I know. We're here. We're all hot. But we're happy. We're get the fan on. We're celebrating.
Because it's actually a day you can turn the fan on. Good for you, Germany.
I know. Go snaps. So that first episode, I thought it was actually more nerve-wracking than I thought it would be to put my voice out there, which, like, at first I thought we've been
really
having.
Are you saying this after we, because we taped that first episode and I'm the one who had to be handheld.
Oh, you
and she
did.
Was like, no, you have to, let's do it, let's put it out now. And I'm like, no, but wait, I don't know. Should I say?
I was like, we have to do it, because I'm the type of person that sometimes I'm like, if I'm scared, that means you got to jump in. You got to dive. And that's how I felt.
Yeah.
But I also, like, I had this moment. And actually what I did was I listened to it once, and then I didn't listen to it again
for a few
days.
Don't tell anybody how many times I listened.
Why don't you tell everybody how many times? Because I still don't know. But I know for myself.
Shut up. Don't judge me, right? Just don't.
I had to stop because I knew that I would overanalyze and I would start to think, oh, did I say this or did I? Maybe I could have said that better. You know what I mean? And ultimately, this is a conversation. There's always other things that you could say or other things that you could do. So I was like, let's just do it. Let's just put it out there. And we did. And I'm so happy that we did, because...
Well, I have to say that, you know, my mother listened to it. And, you know, the fact that she listened to it and liked it is all that matters.
Aww.
I mean, I feel very happy that, of course, she, you know, she was raining down all kinds of brimstone and fire for using the bad words. But, Mommy, and I know you're listening, there's an article on Huffington Post, and it says, intelligent people use more swear words according to the study.
She had it bookmarked for you.
Exactly. And they said researchers in some university at New York, they did studies and they found, it says, a voluminous taboo lexicon may better be considered an indicator of healthy verbal abilities rather than a cover for their deficiencies. They said speakers who use taboo words understand their general expressive content as well as nuanced.
That's exactly what you were saying.
Nuanced distinctions that must be drawn to use slurs appropriately. So,
and you're doing that in multiple languages.
I love you, Mommy.
I know, because that was actually, I think, your feedback to me was like, I listened to it and you didn't say one bad word, and I was like,
yes, so my quota is done. It's all your right. Your off.
I shit.
You know, there's no bad word in German. Like, when my husband listened to it and he was like, isn't that bad that Germany has no, we're so boring,
they just use them very sparingly because it's very bad if you say them.
Well, obviously, there are some words you are not legal. You can't legally say.
No, but I'm not even talking about. I'm talking about, like, if you call somebody an asshole, like in English, asshole. If you do something bad, if you're like, oh my God, stop being an asshole. Like, you can say that. But in German, to use the word Arschloch, yes, it's very serious.
Extreme. It's extreme.
You can get into a fight over that. Or
but children here say Scheiße.
But what I find about Scheiße is that Scheiße actually doesn't have the same effect as, for example, shit. Like, if you say shit, that's like really. That's also, like, that's a curse word, that you're saying something bad, and Scheiße is just kind of thrown around.
No, listen, that's the thing here. I was shocked when we first moved here and my son had his, you know, friends, they come over or whatnot. They're playing and they would just say Scheiße. And I'm like, but that literally translates to shit. How are you at, you know, 9 years old saying Scheiße in front of your mother or in front of adults and that's okay? Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of, like, go in and reprogram my children and, like, look. You don't say Scheiße, but really? I want them to know the bad words. Mm-hmm. But there has to be some kind of respect. You can't be saying that in front of your parents or adults.
The way I took it, because when I first moved here, I was at a cafe once, and there were kids even younger than that. They were like, they must have been 5. And they were sitting there playing with each other, and they kept saying Scheiße. He was saying every word. I turned to my German friend.
And in its right context, too. Like, if they're pissed off say Scheiße, yeah.
And so I was saying, what is going on? Why are they talking that way? And then it was like, it's that word doesn't have the same weight that its direct translation into English does. So they say it more here. Like,
yeah.
But what I find is that then some of the other words, like Arschloch, it's like a totally different.
Well, I have to say, I think... You know, like I said in the last podcast, I think it's very important for children to know curse words, but they have to know when to use them. I think you have a child who is much more, I feel a child who knows how to use the F word or use a proper, you know, curse word is way more safer on the streets. You know, stranger danger, if you see somebody coming, they're not interested to kidnap or rape a child who is going to openly say fuck you. Or with a
think so?
I think so. I think that they're going to be looking for the child that is very docile and is like, oh, you know what, you want this sweet. And they're like, thank you. And being all too polite. I think it's important that children know when not to be polite, like when to be able to use, you know, their words. So,
I mean, I definitely think that if something happens to one of those kids, though, it's not on the fact that they didn't say fuck you, but on the fact that there is a rapist in the area. But, like,
you know what I mean.
But I know what you mean. At the end of the day, we live in a world where, you need to know how to be able to survive.
In these streets of Germany. In these rough streets of Germany.
No, I'm not trying to trivialize the danger in Germany, because that's still something that is happening here.
Yeah.
So. Off of that subject,
the twanging, right? So there's another comment from a friend of mine, and say, oh, you sound like a twang, like you sound like American, and it was so distressing. But I'm blaming Danielle, because she, you know, you hear her accent, and I want to say I want to say that so there's a madness that goes on with my language since I've been here. When we first got here, the first German teacher I had, she was like, you have to speak to your children in German or else they'll never learn German and you will never learn German. And I was so distressed for, like, you know, a good year, because I thought, okay, my children are just going to be those children in school who don't speak proper English. And proper English, proper German.
Okay.
And then I started to say, but you know what? No, fuck that. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to allow anybody to tell me what the language of my family should be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so my children learn German, obviously. And so now at home, we speak a really messed up version of English. The accent, it could go anywhere. It could be real raw char Jamaican, or it could be American, because we watch a lot of American movies and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then it could be this Schwäbisch Deutsch that we speak.
Does your family speak Schwäbisch Deutsch?
My husband is Schwabian, so obviously.
Okay.
My daughter, she speaks bougie. She thinks she speaks bougie. She tries to be all, you know, Hochdeutsch. right, so that's where that comes from. And I don't know, going forward, I'm going to make an effort not to twang, but understand. And I hate, you know, so I felt so bad.
So wait, but because for the American audience, or I guess maybe the UK, whoever's out there, twanging is code switching. So
stop saying that, Danielle. You don't know that. That's I'm
what
anybody is who's listening, who is an American and who is Jamaican, American, please tell me it's the same thing. Because I personally don't know what code switching might
be. Code switching is when you talk one way when you're with your crew and you talk another way when you're with people outside of that. You know what I mean? So whether you're at work or whether you're with the American, you're going to change how you talk. And I'm saying the American, like obviously in America, would just yeah. be what group you're talking to. But like, you change how you talk. And sometimes it's just like, it's actually a matter of survival in America. Like, as you know, like our history is with, you know, African-American vernacular English. And so that's how we talk. And then like, but at the job, like the way white supremacy works is like, oh, you hear how they talk and you hear how they this and they that, instead of actually understanding we have our own grammars, our own words, our own everything. Yeah. Is that like, then we have to switch that and we have to, you know, switch into the code of the white people in order to get that job, in order to get that house, in order to whatever. So well, just, I know that you're not trying to survive talking to me. It's just my natural influence.
Yeah. Which is, and I'm saying it, she has accepted blame and I'm going to work very hard. But also I want to say, I teach business English here. And one of the things also is that you want to be as clear as possible. So you try to enunciate your words and you also try to kind of like lose the accent, because then it's easier for people to understand.
Exactly. But that's exactly what code switching is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like you would try and standardize your English in order to be more palatable to what society.
No, I don't know if it's palatable, Danielle. It's more clear, because when you're teaching,
yeah, but what is clear? Because if the standard is... No, because
if you can't understand, like if I speak in my Jamaican patois, mm-hmm. using Jamaican patois words, mm-hmm. that's not English, right? Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, if, for example, you have somebody who is heavily accented. I had a student who is from, he's French. And when he's speaking English, because of his accent, because of his French accent, when he speaks, you really have to listen carefully and mm-hmm. to be, you know what I mean? So it's not that I'm saying he has to try to be British English, but in order to understand, yeah, if you, I don't know if you know, there's people who are also from Russia. When they speak English, you hear that mm-hmm. every heavy, thick mm-hmm. accent. So I try to do that when I'm teaching, like to make sure that I speak as clearly and enunciate as clearly, just for the basis of understanding.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying about being able to talk clearly. I also am of the opinion, though, that like, and I don't know if it's just being here or traveling or talking with other people. You know, I lived with an American for a while who we spoke very different American Englishes. And so this was a conversation that we would have a lot about, like, why is it that you are more, quote, understandable than me, you know? And this was something that, like, it really opened my eyes to the ways that, like, we by default think that talking clearly is talking more like white people or European, you know, English
speakers. No, I don't think that. I think that there is, you have to be able to understand. I have,
what does that mean?
No, because when you have somebody, Danielle, who is... I have people in my class right now. This guy is from China. When he's speaking, I cannot understand. He doesn't, mm-hmm. because he doesn't know how to pronounce the words clearly, right? And that comes with practice.
But when he is able to But I think we're talking about two different things right now. Because on one hand, we're talking about, you know, somebody who's not a native English speaker that is learning English and needs to learn how to...
And that's fine. But I'm saying, for me, as a teacher, I feel like I have to make sure that they understand. I'm saying embarrassment, or I'm saying... I have to say the word so that they can hear it exactly mm-hmm. how it is. Mm-hmm. And if they speak with an accent, that's fine. But okay. It's important for them
to... So you're saying that from doing that, like, now your default is just to speak more like this and less with a Jamaican accent.
No, I'm saying that when I'm with you, your American accent infiltrates my abilities, and I'm going to not do that anymore. So you have to learn some Jamaican words.
That's fine. I would love to learn some Jamaican words, there as you go. Know. And also, what I've found, too, just from, like, living abroad and traveling a bit, is that when people speak in ways that I don't understand, like, I actually really enjoy trying to, you know, be more flexible and figure out or ask, you know, and let them elaborate, because, I don't think that everybody should be able to talk like me.
But you don't always have that luxury in business English, though. When you're dealing with, you know, contracts, or you're dealing with negotiations, you have to be very clear. Mm-hmm. And because you can get into serious issues. And that's because that's what I do. I see that that's what my students need. Yep. Yeah? Yeah. When they're doing speaking in a social setting, then they can say, I guess, there you go. Code switching.
We had a lot of things.
Let us hear your thoughts. I want to hear what you all think about that. Like, is it okay to do that? I wouldn't say twang, because the twang is not a good thing in Jamaica. I think that people...
Code switching, I think, is not necessarily a good thing, but it's just a lot of times a matter of survival.
Yeah, it's what you have to do to figure out the different spaces that you're in and how to adjust to that.
So
let's hear what you all have to say.
What do you think? And here's a good question. Do you have to do that in German? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. God, don't ask that question. You know how my German is always on struggle.
I feel like you always have whatever you speak, depending on where you are geographically, but then you always have this Hochdeutsch
that is what you use. Deutsch,
that might be the code switching here. You see what I'm saying? That's a good question.
But you know, my one of my German teachers one time always just says to me, oh, you know, it's better to learn Hochdeutsch. I'm like, but why are you saying that though? We live here in Trabenland. And for those, you know, who are listening, the south of Germany is known as Schwäbischland,
Schwabia or something. Yeah. I've heard lots of different names
but
for
it's,
it.
But it's, for me, this is where Porsche is and Audi, and this is where all of that good stuff, Germany, Mercedes. Is made. Mercedes is made. Whereas North Germany, you know, Nordrhein-Westfalen and all of those places in the north, they speak a different type of German. Which is more Austrian. In Jamaica, you have somebody from, I don't know, St. Elizabeth, which is a parish in Jamaica, or somebody from Montego Bay. You can hear the difference between them and somebody who lives in Kingston, or somebody who... Like, there are subtle differences.
Okay.
Although, I think the difference here is not subtle, because you can definitely hear the Schwäbisch with the Babele and... What are some of the...
You could say ish, or you could say ick, like, depending on where you are in this country. One thing that I thought was really interesting, because I also had that, where I was like, why are we learning Hochdeutsch if I live in a place where people speak
Schwäbisch? That's what I said to my teacher as well.
And it actually, to this day, it still annoys me that I don't know how to speak Schwäbisch, like, unless I'm kind of joking about it, because my ex, his grandmother could only speak Schwäbisch. And what I found was, like, when we would have conversations, especially at first, my German wasn't so good, so I would speak, like, 50% English, 50% Hochdeutsch, and she would speak... You know, because back in her day, they didn't really learn Hochdeutsch, so she would speak 50% Hochdeutsch, 50% Schwäbisch, and so there was only, like, about 25% that we actually understood of each other, but what I found after a while talking to her is that if I stopped trying to hear what she was saying as Hochdeutsch, and I just listened to her, I could really understand her, because Schwäbisch, like, okay, for example, in Hochdeutsch, you would say, ich gehe nach Hause, that means I'm going home. But in Schwäbisch, you would say, I gang heim. And if you think about that in English, I gang heim, I'm going home.
Yeah.
It's much closer to English. So actually, when I would talk with her and she would speak Schwäbisch and I would just sit back and listen, a lot of times I could understand her because the way she was talking was close to English.
I think Schwäbisch, since living here, people who live here and they speak Schwäbisch, they are proud of it. They don't feel like it's...
One hand, it's like, oh, you're speaking Schwäbisch. But on the other hand, Schwäbia has Mercedes, Porsche.
It's the richest...
You know what I'm saying? They're doing pretty well down here in Little Schwäbia. So. Okay, so... All right, to end this off, why don't we share one thing about our day, about our week? Something funny. I have something funny that happened to me that I can share.
Okay. I don't know. I can't. You go first. I'll think of something. I don't know.
All right. So I was on the train like 2 days ago.
Yeah, whatever. You know, I hate the train. Can I just say this out loud on this podcast? I hate the train. I hate the train.
Why?
Because, Danielle, you know how I live with the idea all that I'm going to get lost. I'm going to go on the train to Stuttgart and then I'm going to end up somewhere in Russia or something.
You might.
That's not even funny that you would say that. call home.
You have your phone, all right? unlike somebody like, you know.
Oh, yes. By the way, we have to talk about the fact that this young woman does not have a cell phone and she uses
it. It's 2014, y'all.
Stop being like she behaves like she's better than the rest of us does not have
a phone.
That
is something that is projected onto me.
We will speak about that at another time. And I'm going to invite people who know Danielle and know how anxiety anxiety-inducing it is. Like this morning, she... Oh, tell your story and then I'll tell mine.
I know, thank you. I was about to say, you're getting all in it.
Yes, because we have to have
she a... She's emotional about my no phone situation. No, I don't understand.
No, why. We have to have a big conversation about that. We have to have another episode.
All right, maybe just that's episode that. 3, all right?
No, it's not episode 3 because when we're having that conversation, I would like to invite people who have been affected by your no phone situation.
Are you saying that we're going to have to get some more chairs in here?
Yes, pretty much.
In my life, come out. All right. Well, my story about the train was that I was on the train the other day. I was coming home. It was a long day at work. And I'm sitting there. And this girl got on the train. And she sat down right across from me. And you know, like when you're on the train, I don't have a phone that I can zone out into. So I just like either look at the people, but I try not to stare too long because you know how the Germans stare. And so it's like, it's something I feel really, really uncomfortable with. So I just like, we'll try and look out the window or I'll try to look at the ads or something. So I was doing that. And then this girl pulled out a donut. And you know, donut, do you want to talk about what a donut is?
No, you do it.
Have you had donut?
I had it yesterday and I declared that we're not eating donut anymore. What? No, I think it's awful. It feels like I'm stuffing my belly with bricks.
Oh my gosh. See, that's the exact point. Donut is like, it's like a Turkish sandwich with like thinly sliced chicken or lamb, or it can be beef too. Just anything but pork. And then it has like vegetables and sauce. And like... It's a delicious sandwich, but it's also a disgusting sandwich in the sense that, like, you're getting it all, it's dripping down your hands, like, it's falling out of the bottom, and it's so good, but it's just so bad.
Afterwards, it's good when you're eating it, but after, I'm like, I'm too old for this. I swear, yesterday we had it, and I was like, no, we're done, we're not having it. My son had to, you know, it was like, you can't ban food. Every day we're banning a new food.
Well, yeah.
And she was eating the donut and what?
She was eating the donut. I just kind of looked at her and I was, because I was thinking, you don't see that very often that somebody eats a donut on the train. But she did. She went full out. She was totally unapologetic. She let it drip all down. There were pieces of meat falling on the ground. And like, on one hand, I feel like if a man was doing that, I would be disgusted. But there was something so empowering about watching this young woman, like, just eat this. And it was something where I really had to stop and I thought. And I was having all these thoughts while I was watching her because she, like, we couldn't stop looking at each other because she knew what she was doing, you know? And she was like, oh, I'm sorry. And I ended up saying to her in German, the equivalent of, you know, we're allowed to eat too. Mm-hmm. And she said back to me, we're allowed, like, we have to. And I was like, yes, snaps to that, you know, like yes, we have every right to eat and to eat in public. And then it was just so weird to me because I really started to think, like, have I ever seen this before? Have I ever actually seen a woman that's totally in this, like, male gaze? She had long hair and she was beautiful and, you know, but she was eating, she was just nourishing her body. And I was like, it was a really nice moment. So I feel like a lot of times I complain about, you know, certain things that I experienced in Germany because, you know, there are those experiences there, but this was something that happened where I was like, that's a highlight of my week, actually.
Seeing donut somebody eat donut on the train. Yeah, she was the highlight of your week.
I don't know if I just have, you know, low standards.
Or, I think so. But you know, just eating food. I remember when I went to a Catholic school in Jamaica, all girl, and that was one of the rules. You're not allowed to eat in your uniform on the street.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just a rule. You're not allowed to eat in your uniform on the street.
But what was, why? I don't understand.
Because it was considered to be unladylike.
Like, why? What is so unfeminine? Like, what? Like, I feel like that's just pure patriarchy. Like, you're not allowed to eat?
No, but it's not that you're not allowed to eat. It's like, if you are going to eat, that you have to sit and you have to eat in a space that is... And why would you be walking on the street and eating?
But that's exactly what my thought was as she was eating. Because I was thinking, like, well, when do I ever see this? I've never actually seen a woman eat outside of being in a setting where you have utensils and napkins and all of the things that, like, allow you to
You've never seen that, Daniel. I can't believe that.
The way that this woman was eating in public, nasty. Like,
but see, that's the thing. Why you said it was nasty was because she was dripping or whatnot.
It was everywhere.
Like, I don't know. I feel like...
I was happy for her. I felt like she was free, you know? I don't need a napkin. I will use no fork.
Like I said, when we were growing at school, that was just it. We weren't... And it was just a set of rules. Just like we were not allowed to be on the streets, I think, after 5 or something like that. You were supposed to be, you know, at home studying. It was just all about discipline. And, you know, I never took it to mean...
But I wonder if it was just purely... purely like discipline or also just like the social expectations. Because I was thinking about it later on, because I'm telling you, Barbara, I don't think I've ever seen that. And so then I started to think about like, how did that happen? And I started thinking back to my own schooling and like the way that us girls would sit around and we would talk about stuff like that with boys. Like, I could never eat a burger on my first date.
See, that's the thing. But that's the thing, though. Even though I grew up knowing that, okay, I can't eat on the street if I'm in my uniform, or you know, I don't feel like I can't eat a burger in front of a boy, though.
You never felt that
way? No. Oh, so okay. I understood the whole business of, you know, how you conduct yourself as a lady. Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. But maybe this is a generational thing, because I'm sure if I speak to my daughter, she'd be like, what? Why? Why can't I eat a burger or whatnot on the street?
I would be interested in
that. But I don't know that this is, just like I have issues with sometimes see children sitting on the street. Like, they'll sit on the sidewalk, just sit, a whole group of them. And in my head, I feel like, okay, but why are you sitting on the street? I don't know if I can say that that's a Jamaican thing to not do, but it's definitely a Barbara thing to not do. Like, why are you sitting? I mean, if you're in on the street, stand. And when you get to somewhere to sit, then you see what? But you ever see these children? They sit on the street, on the sidewalk.
I love what you're doing right now. No. Keep going, please.
But boys and girls.
But what are they doing? Are they eating or are they just sitting there? They're just
sitting on the street, on the side of the street. And I'm like, why are you doing that? Why? But this must be a cultural thing. It must be a generational thing. But that for me is like, why are you doing that? Why?
I would want to ask them, because I'm trying to think if I ever just sat on the street. Maybe because you can't go home. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know. Like, so sometimes when I'm driving past and I see, I always say to my truck, if I ever see you, if I pass on the street and you sit, and my daughter always says, yes, we know this. We know
but
this.
But that's because they could all come to your house, right?
And just
all
yeah, but there. That's different though. Why are you sitting on the street?
But what I'm trying to say is, like, I know in my house, at least sometimes, it would be like, you guys are not all about to come up in this house, you know, you need to go outside. And then where do you go?
Yeah, you go out, but see, here you can go outside and there are places, benches, when you walk into the forest, they can sit on those benches. Anyway, this is not even a topic.
Was this your story?
Shut up. No, I have no story. I'm so tired right now. Aww, I'm done.
Okay,
we how long is
Let's
this?
Let's close this up. It's long enough to stop, I think. Thank you guys for tuning into our ramblings.
Yes, and please, let's hear your comments on all of our ramblings. Hear if you agree, you disagree, or, you know, let's hear what you think.
That was episode 2.
Episode 2.
All right, yeah. And then we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.